Today, I watched Home Alone and got into my feelings for Christmas and actually, like, put up my Christmas tree for the first time in, like, 4 years. So,
oh, wow. Okay, wow. Yeah.
Because I haven't put it up because I've got two cats, and I was like, this is probably not a good plan. So I'm kind of giving this, like, a trial run.
Teach the kiddies how to have a playful but safe Christmas. Do you, do you like, I assume you have the artificial trees. You're not bringing it home.
No. I've got, like, you know, a pre-lit artificial tree. So,
yeah. That'd be hilarious if you're like, yeah, it's a real one. I just keep it every year to year to year. It's really dry now.
No, that's a fire hazard.
Oh, yeah.
Big, big fire hazard. So, no. Just a fake tree. So, hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids. This week, we've got Tess's boyfriend, Ian, on with us. We've mentioned him a few times in the past. We call him, like, Producer Ian. So he's here with us today. So, Ian, go ahead and say hi and introduce yourself a bit.
Yeah. Hey, what's up, everybody? I think I've showed up a few times. I was much more frequently visiting and audible in the background of the first season and a half, just because I was hanging out in the background with Tess, just listening and making sure everything was running okay in the first season or so when you guys were getting going. So this is what I do, man. This is, for those of you who don't know me, I'm an audio professional, an audiovisual professional. I work in the industry with Tess. I don't work at CBS or anything like that, but I definitely have to do a lot with video and audio,
and
podcasts and stuff like that. But yeah, that's pretty much me. I don't got a whole lot going on right now. I was telling you, like, crap, I don't have any personal projects to talk about or anything like that. COVID has kind of, like, taken my
kind of killed everything.
Yeah, it really has. Like, the guys who I make music with, even, I'm just like, hey, you know, this is weird, right? When are we going to get to do this again? And it was like, yeah, hopefully soon. So,
yeah, I know one of my friends that lives, like, two blocks away. We've been talking about, like, doing some kind of music together because I have this whole studio set up.
Right.
I finally got, like, a MIDI to USB cable for my keyboard, so we can actually start doing stuff like that. Like, I've said that I was going to get that cable for, like, probably 3 years now, and it's
like,
just
how long has that been sitting in your Amazon wish list?
It, like, literally has been sitting in there for 3 years, and it's like, it's not like it's expensive. It was like $8.
Yeah, I was gonna say they're like super cheap.
I'll get it eventually. So I finally was like, you know what, I'm gonna buy it. And we're talking about, like, starting to make some kind of music or something like that. So
cool.
He also is insisting on teaching me how to play guitar, which I've tried before, and I don't think I'm capable. But we'll see how it goes.
It's worth a shot. It's definitely worth a shot. I used to teach lessons a lot, and I'll tell you, the adults are definitely harder to teach because, you know, kids have that super plasticity in their brain. They're easy to teach anything.
Right. Yeah.
But if you find the right thing for an adult to teach them guitar, it comes along a lot easier.
Gotcha.
So if you find the right genre to play along to and learn, that's my hint. That's my one hint when it comes to adults learning new instruments, is find a song you like and try to learn it. That's the only way I learn it.
Well, that's good advice. So we're going to go ahead and flip the penny for our thoughts. Ian, you've actually got the official penny, so we're going to go ahead and let you flip it. But I am going to let you pick heads or tails.
Oh,
and
no.
And we'll go from there.
Oh, no. That's so much pressure. Okay. I guess I'm going to go heads. Ready? Here we go.
Okay.
It's heads.
There you go. You get to go first.
Oh, cool. Okay, cool. Awesome. That's totally what I wanted. All right, cool. Well, guys, I want to talk about something that obviously I've been around conspiracies and cryptids a while now, since the beginning.
Almost three years now.
That's crazy to think about. Right? It's been going on that long. Thank you guys for sticking with us that long.
No,
that's
kidding.
Crazy. But yeah, so I've been listening, hiding in the background, waiting patiently, and just kind of, you know, as a listener, as I'm sure everybody listening does, that we come up with our own, we're, you know, like, oh, why didn't you guys think of this? It could have been this, or, you know, or have you guys heard about this, or, oh, they're going to go down the rabbit hole of here, and then you guys don't. And so I've kind of found this weird, now I promise I wouldn't call it this, but I'm gonna call it anyways, a grand unified conspiracy theory.
Ooh, okay.
So a lot of the things that you guys talk about on this show have a common denominator.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit of a strange one, because it's not necessarily like, oh, it's the same guy showing up in every conspiracy. No, that would be a crazy one. This right. is literally sound. And okay. I'm a sound engineer, obviously. That's mm-hmm. what I pay attention to. My entire job relies on managing sound pressure levels and frequencies in a room, and radio frequencies, even, you know, like mm-hmm. wireless microphones and wireless audio and video and things like that. So I'm trained and highly attuned to looking out for frequencies. Bad frequencies, good frequencies, sounds, good and bad, mm-hmm. and things that may cause, you know, technology to go crazy, which is radio frequencies.
Right.
And that's one of the thing that I saw that through all these different episodes was that all of these different things, usually for the most part in the conspiracy side of things, have to do with resonance or sound.
Okay.
At a deep level. Now, some of these are a little bit of a stretch, but it does go pretty deep. So if you're not really familiar with the difference between a sound and resonance, we're definitely going to cover it. Okay. But the I guess what I want to talk about mainly is how Conspiracies and Cryptids over the past few seasons has had talked about imperceptible forces and how they can have an effect on our day-to-day lives. That's the conspiracy that there are in, right, because that could be the Illuminati, that could be you know, name any of the things that you've talked about outside of the ones that involve nature for the most part. Excuse me, I'm getting a little lost here. We might have to edit this little piece. Okay. Here I'm getting used to relearning how to read these notes. Okay, I'm gonna start over here. Okay, one of the common themes across the Conspiracies and Cryptids podcast over the last few seasons have been how imperceptible forces can have an effect on our day-to-day lives. Mm-hmm. People can come up with some pretty creative answers to their problems, but it often comes down to some pretty simple solutions more often than not. And some of those happen to be sound and resonant frequencies.
Okay.
And I'm not here to push a new conspiracy on you guys. I'm just trying to show you how a lot of these conspiracies have this in common. And the fact that they do is not only interesting, but mm-hmm. it almost gives rise to something else that is just as magical, which is the understanding of how science and sound physics plays into our perception of reality, which is basically what conspiracies are. You know, one person may have a perception of reality, one person may have a different perception. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to, you know, meet that gap in the middle, that's where conspiracy theories happen, when you don't know the answer and everything, you get together, you dialogue, and it blossoms.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So for instance, I want to tell you a little bit about a theater here in Sacramento called the B Street Theater. Ooh, spooky.
Oh, I've heard of the B Street Theater.
Yeah. No, it's this tiny little theater on the I don't even know what part of town it is. I'm not a Sacramentite originally, so I don't know my locations very well, but I have heard of this theater, and I know that they have a new one that they've made, and it's not that one. It's not the nice one that looks like made out of shipping containers. It's the old one. And it happens to be located over by the train tracks.
Okay.
And I had heard the story of some people in the community that worked at that theater years ago, when they were having issues with some of the lighting.
Okay.
And as anyone who's ever worked in a theater, any type of venue would tell you, there are gremlins. There's the cryptid for you. There are gremlins that live.
Yeah,
in the
or like theater ghosts or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they will unplug cables. They will move things around. It makes your job really hard.
Right, right. You could almost say that, like, all the little superstitions that theaters have are a conspiracy theory in and of themselves, you know, and like don't say the word Macbeth, don't whistle, keep a light on, you know, different things like that.
So this environment kind of invites this mystique. So
yes,
apparently they were having now this is, you know, obviously secondhand story, but they were talking about how the lights were constantly going out. They would blow up these tungsten lights, the bulbs in them. They're supposed to last, you know, a couple years.
Yeah,
I replaced these things at my work. They last a decently long time, right. But they do wear out over time because they are made of metal. But these were going out really fast, like within months at times.
Oh, okay.
And so they thought, you know, like, what could it be? What is it? Haunted? Is this some, you know, bad omen or whatever? Do we? I'm sure the guy who's buying the lights is like, did I buy the wrong brand or something like that? So what the interesting thing was that the answer through all of this was sound and resonance. What was happening was that the train tracks behind the theater, when a train would go by, it would shake the theater. And it was right. Well known, you know, if you go to this theater that you could be watching Macbeth and then all of a sudden there'd be in the background. You know, it's well known that this is a thing.
Okay.
But they didn't put two and two together until, you know, years down the line, that the rumbling from the train going through the very low frequencies were rumbling the tiny filaments, the tungsten filaments inside of the bulbs. And that tiny little bit of wiggle would make it snap. It would just like literally snap itself.
Wow.
From the resonance.
So it was train ghosts.
Exactly. So anybody who doesn't who isn't a lighting guy, who doesn't have to fix those himself, thinks that it's ghosts. Mm-hmm. Your brain can come up with 1,000 different reasons why that could have happened until you get up there and check the bulb. And then you realize while you're up there, which is what I think happened, some guy was up there changing the bulbs when a train went past. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh my goodness, all these bulbs are like shaking.
Right.
That's probably bad.
Yeah.
So just kind of an interesting insight into how resonant frequencies can be a bit of a nuisance and be kind of scary at times.
Yeah.
So one of the things that is a driving factor behind a lot of stories that I read are and I think you've talked about this too, the idea of infrasound.
Yes. And yeah, we did ultrasound. Talk about that.
Okay.
We talked about infrasound in the Dyatlov Pass episode.
Oh, so, yeah. We're going to bring that one back up.
Okay. Awesome.
So that's actually the fun part about this episode. Obviously, I'm going to bring up a bunch of other things you guys have already talked about, and we'll get to kind of connect some dots here. So Let's start off with talking about infrasound and ultrasound. If you don't know the difference, basically human ears can perceive sound pressure level or waves between roughly 30-ish hertz, given, you know, how young you are, how old, okay. old you are, up
right.
to about 17K on average.
Okay.
So that's a pretty wide band, you know, 20 vibrations per second versus 17,000.
Mm-hmm.
But in the grand scheme of things, that's actually kind of a narrow band. It gets us by.
Yeah.
But other things exist beyond that. And the infrasound is the spookier of the two.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll talk about that first. So infrasound can do some really interesting things to the human body, we found out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've heard of the notorious brown note.
Yes.
Okay, so if the Mythbusters did a thing on it where they pointed a bunch of subwoofers at this guy and like played the lowest note possible or whatever the brown note's supposed to be, and mm-hmm. it's supposed to make you, you know, like release your bowels.
Right.
And this is not a real thing. They tested it out. Other people have tested it out. The brown note is not necessarily a real thing. But what we have found is that low frequencies can impact you in a way physically that cause discomfort. So one of the things that can happen, and this is one of my favorite conspiracies because it's something that pops up quite often over the country, is anytime somebody tries to build a wind farm. I don't know if any of you have ever been near a place where they're trying to build a wind farm. It's not built yet. They're trying to legally get the rights, the land rights to build it.
Okay.
Every single time, there is going to be somebody in the local news who posts an article about how the infrasound
kills bats and makes, you know, can kill you. And there was apparently the story of this guy who used to work on wind turbines for the windmills.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he decided to like go stand up under it to make sure it was working or something. And the wind picked up at a certain speed and it created some sort of low harmonic frequency.
Okay.
And it was so loud, you know, found pressure level loud, that it shook him to death. When they got him to the hospital, they opened him up to, you know, do the biopsy or whatever. I guess that'd be the coroner. But they opened him up for the biopsy. And supposedly his insides had been ground to a pulp. Just
that
torn to
sound
bits.
Real, but okay.
That's what I thought too. I was like, that's a bit of a stretch. I like those windmills. They look pretty cool. I've been very, very close to them and I didn't die. But that's the kind of conspiracy, if you will,
right,
that is perpetuated by these types of basically the ignorance behind what low end frequency and infrasound actually is.
Right.
So that's what it's not. Let's talk about what it can do.
Okay.
So what we've found is that in certain conditions, if it's loud enough, infrasound causes, obviously, if you've been to a movie theater in the last 10 years, they use infrasound to create suspense, you know, that building pressure feeling in your chest. You're like, what is happening? Something's going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
So that is that's a physical effect. That's something that which is weird that we evolved to have this fear of low in frequencies. It's probably earthquakes, but you never know. It could be something weirder than that.
Right.
But we have an innate fear of this low in frequency. So there's your psychological element. So we can psychologically control people with this because it's lower than our hearing. Mm-hmm. While you can feel low in frequencies technically through bone conductance, like your chest and, you know, your skeleton, low enough frequencies, you're not physically able to hear. You're only able to feel it. And if you don't know you're able to hear something, sorry if this is kind of confusing, but if you like your brain is feeling something but isn't hearing it and perceiving it audibly, it confuses you. Like your brain gets very confused. It's like when you're on a boat and sloshing back and forth, your brain doesn't know where the horizon is. So you get sick.
Yes.
It's the same kind of exact thing. Your brain gets low in frequency sick. And one of the places that this showed up, and the first place I ever heard it, and was a story about, now again, grain of salt here, but supposedly a Russian research facility was working on something, and this guy is, you know, up and coming scientist. He's trying to make a name for himself. He's going to stay after work,
right?
Do a little extra work, clean the beaker bottles, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he stays until like 5:30, 6, and he starts to feel sick to his stomach. Mm-hmm. He's really, really sick. He's like, "Well, that's weird. I'll go home." He's fine. Next day, same thing. Same thing. And day after day after day, after a week of this, he's like, "I got to go to the doctor. This is super weird. Why is it only at 6 o'clock, you know?" Come to find out after a long, I don't know how long it took to figure this out, but the AC unit, the fan, the central AC fan in this building was shutting, stay off until 6 when the building was evacuated from, you know, business. And then it would take all the air out of the building to refresh all the oxygen. Mm-hmm. And that fan was creating a resonant frequency that was so low that it was affecting him on a medical level, so that he had to, you know, eventually went to the doctor, I guess. So, it's one of those things that, like, I don't know if I necessarily believe it. It is, again, like kind of a creepypasta thing.
Right.
But I've mixed sound for, gosh, now almost 15 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was outdoor, you know, large events. And those sound systems can hit really, really low frequencies. And I'll tell you what, being able to just punch people in the chest with it, it's like, it's part of the power. You know, you're like driving a big semi. There's power behind that rig as the low in frequencies hit you in the chest. So let's move on to
hang on one second. So, like, going back to that story, there was actually, like, I remember there was a story on the No Sleep podcast, which I've worked for in the past, that was about something similar. It was like these people were working in like an office building late at night, and yeah, it turned out that like the air conditioning units was causing like infrasound, and it was causing them to feel a feeling of dread and to hallucinate this like entity that was like tracking them down, trying to kill them.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So I've heard similar stories to this. So yeah.
So it's definitely, like I said, it's definitely an interesting phenomenon. And it's someone who I'm interested, obviously, in social construction and engineering and how people can be affected. It's so interesting how something as simple as low frequency affects you on such a like guttural, visceral level.
Like a metaphysical level.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's take a little bit of a detour now and talk about ultrasound.
Okay.
And how it plays into reality, I guess. Mm-hmm. Ultrasound being everything above, you know, 20K hertz, 20,000 hertz.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about ultrasonic frequencies is that there are things on this earth that communicate in the ultrasonic range.
Right.
Living things.
Yes. Yeah.
Rats.
Rats. They even say cats do. That, you know, because cats apparently only meow to interact with humans, and they interact with each other apparently on an ultrasonic frequency.
Oh, wow. That's super weird. I've seen them like do that chatty thing at the window. Yeah. Like that sounds like, so weird.
For the most part, meowing and everything isn't to communicate with other cats. It's to communicate with their infants, you know, babies who, you know, can't see or hear properly, and to interact with humans. They don't communicate with each other that way.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's so crazy. Yeah, I was watching this video that showed Tess. She had a rat when she was young. And they took a really high-end microphone and shove it inside a rat cage and then tickle it. Mm-hmm. Tickle it. It's on the back. And then they record that and then pitch it down like 5 octaves or something crazy. Mm-hmm. And you can hear the squeaks, like they're audible squeaks, and they're there. It's just that they're literally too high for us. So there are things communicating beyond what we can perceive. None of this like orcas have psychic powers nonsense. There's rats and they're squeaking at us. We don't know what they're saying. So within ultrasonic frequencies too, there have been many conspiracies on using those to control people, again, kind of like the social engineering. It's like, what is that sound? What is that? What is that whining sound?
Yeah.
It's very irritating, especially if you can hear up in the higher registers if you're a younger person.
Right.
I remember back when we were in like high school, they were talking about the mosquito tone.
Oh, yeah. And I was literally just thinking about that. I had that tone in college. And my professors couldn't hear it, but like everybody in the classroom, every time my phone would go off with the mosquito tone, everybody in the classroom would start looking around, but our professor couldn't hear it at all because our professor was like 50 or 60, something like that.
It's really, really interesting. I don't want to keep going back to the thing as being a sound guy, but as a sound, no, it's just like as a mother, as a sound guy, it's a weird thing you have to learn to deal with, because if you mix sound for older audiences, because they cannot hear those frequencies, they focus in on other frequencies, and maybe those frequencies are the ones you're not focusing on, and maybe those frequencies have something wrong with the room, like acoustically.
Okay.
So when old people come up to you and you're like, can you turn it down? It's really, really loud. It's like, yeah, they're old and sensitive, but they may actually be perceiving something much louder than you are because of the fact that you don't, or they don't have the hearing that you do. So a little bit of an interesting thing about getting older and sound loss is that technically it is louder for you. And I, as a sound man, I apologize to anybody who is offended by loud sound pressure levels.
That's really interesting though.
Kind of taken aside here, I want to talk about how sound and resonance was used musically and artistically to create some interesting conspiracy theories.
Okay.
So I don't know about you, but I'm a huge like Beatles fan. I love the like classic rock. I grew up on all that stuff, as everybody did. I'm sure everybody here has heard about how there are secret hidden messages in the Beatles songs.
Oh God, right?
Right, yeah.
I love, like, play it backwards and it says, you know, like
Yep.
So and so is already dead or worship Satan.
You got it.
Like that. Yep.
So some of that was real. Like there actually is one Beatles song, Revolution Number 9, where there was a backwards message that says something like "Turn me on, dead man," or something like that. Mm-hmm. Another one, "Bites the Dust," has a little bit of a backward section and. Sorry, can't talk. A backwards section in it where Freddie Mercury allegedly encourages the listeners to start making salads with more jazz cabbage. And then another band that I personally like, Electric Light Orchestra, did it as well.
Didn't like Stairway to Heaven or Highway to Hell supposedly have one in it as well?
Stairway to Heaven. And this is where I wanted to talk about audio spectrography. Sorry, okay. It's a hard word. So this is a niche area of conspiracy theorists that use basically audio mapping software, you know, like volt or amplitudes mapped to a line,
right.
Oscillators and things, to make graphical representations of the sounds that are coming out of the speakers. Mm-hmm. And you can create pictures with this. And it's really quite interesting. There are artists that do it now, but in the beginning, people were seeing, like, as the running their LPs of the Beatles through these things, and they would claim to see devil's faces and demons,
subliminal and all messaging sorts of and stuff things, like that.
Subliminal messages and messages written in the frequency. Yeah, and one of the ways that you can do this is by modulating the different frequencies using ultrasonic frequencies. So things that you can't hear on the medium that, you know, possibly, you know, modulate whatever's going on. So there is some sort of alternate perception.
Right.
Again, it's out there. I'm fairly advanced in this kind of stuff and I would love to try this kind of thing. I can't figure it out. So I don't necessarily hold too much weight in it, but like I said, there's an entire group of people out there who do this for fun, just running songs through spectrograph, audio spectrograph. There we go. My goodness. So, but my favorite artist representation, or I guess usage of frequency manipulation is called binaural beats.
I've heard of that. Okay. I'm not very familiar with it, but I have heard of it.
Anybody who's done any sort of research online about meditation will inevitably run into binaural beats.
Okay.
It's just one of those things. It's like, you know, homeopathy kind of, it gets into that world a little bit.
Right. But
there's a truth behind a little bit of everything. So binaural beats, for those of you who aren't aware, are an interesting phenomenon that happens with sound where you get two frequencies that are close enough together that aren't complementary, and they create this this beat pattern, this kind of wave, like webbing pattern. Mm-hmm. And I actually have my guitar right here, and I wanted to kind of show you what this sounds like for those of you who don't know, because it's really, really interesting how this works.
I'm interested.
So I've got a guitar here. I'm going to play two different notes here, just the two bottom strings on the guitar. They're in tune. Oh, thank goodness they're in tune. Okay. So when you got a guitar in tune, these two notes are, I believe, fourth apart, I think, fifth apart. I can't remember off the top of my head. And they are very complementary.
Right.
They sound very good together, very smooth. So when you're tuning a guitar, any guitarist knows this, if you start to detune one of those just a little bit, it starts to sound pretty gnarly.
Right.
So you listen to those waves that show up. Mm-hmm. You're going to hear these kind of like, like warbling.
Okay.
Those are the binaural beats. So here, watch this.
Okay.
So you hear as it goes out of tune, it's like, da. Yeah. What you can do with these is you can actually take this idea and remove it from a guitar that is a monophonic audible instrument, meaning that you're hearing, you know, what's coming out of the sound hole with both of your ears at the exact same time for the most part.
Right.
And you can turn it into a stereo instrument like a synthesizer.
Okay.
Plug it into it. So what you would do is you take, you put a set of headphones on like we got on now. Mm-hmm. You go into a synthesizer program on your computer or whatever, and you take a pitch, be that 440 for concert A in 1 year, and then 440 in the other year, and then down tune it just a little bit.
Okay.
And that can be 1 hertz, that can be 10. And supposedly there are magic numbers to different ratios in between. And because you are not hearing them audibly at this, you know, like the beats aren't being created in the air in front of you.
Right.
They're being created in your mind. You're perceiving the binaural beats because, you know, you're not getting the
warbling or whatever. Right.
In front of you. It's happening in your brain.
Okay.
Which is very bizarre that our brains can do this, that we create this perception. Be that as it may, some people now believe that part of those beats can be used to reprogram the kind of frequency that our brains run on. Like every electrical thing has a frequency that it runs on.
Right, right.
And, you know, that's why we have EEGs, you know, stick the thing on the cap on and it tells
you all the and you can actually see like your body's frequency.
Exactly.
Right.
So apparently you can tune these binaural beats that are, again, being perceived but not actually happening physically. Mm-hmm. And it causes some sort of effect, be that a high, a hallucinization, a relaxation mm-hmm. of sorts. I've heard there's a song out there that was engineered to be the most relaxing song in the world, and it uses this technique of synthesizers that are you know, right ear is pitched slightly different than the left ear to create mm-hmm. these subliminal.
I want to say I've listened to that before. Like I've done some research into this, but not mm-hmm. like not a ton, just you know, like scratching the surface of it. And I feel like right. I have listened to that, like, you know, most soothing sound on the internet or something like that. So
I'm sure if you guys go Google it or YouTube, yeah, the most relaxing sound ever, you'll pull it up. I don't remember off the top of my head, mm-hmm. unfortunately. But yeah, there is a little like that's it's from a like I don't know from a psychology perspective, I guess, or mm-hmm. physiological perspective. I think that's really interesting.
Oh, yeah, weird it really is.
Brains perceive things that just aren't there.
Yeah,
they're not actually there. And yet there it is. I'm experiencing it in itself. So one of the ways that we use this, obviously, is therapy.
Yes.
So I've those of like, you who have been to
therapy and sound therapy. Yes.
So those of you who've been to professional therapy, there are many different types of tools that they use that are honestly at first glance a little bizarre because we, you know, these are cutting edge physiological ways that we've learned to control our, you know, our brains and emotions and whatnot. But one of them, some of them are these have to do with audio based. I don't say learning, but, you know, like audible based things. So people that do. I see ads for them on Craigslist all the time that like they come over to your house with the singing bowls mm-hmm. and do meditations and things like that.
Right.
Yes. That does that. It obviously puts you in a calming.
Right. Because they resonate state. At the right frequency.
Right. And I wouldn't even say that so much. It's that they're calming and it's, you know, the mood, the vibe, the bing, you know, just like bells and it's singing. It's droning a little bit. It's very relaxing.
P.S. Sorry to interject, but the name of the like the most relaxing song is called Weightless and it's by Marconi Union.
Yes.
I will put a link to that in our show notes. But yeah, so I have Marconi listened to that before.
Marconi Union foreshadowing. Okay.
Oh, God.
So I think that everybody gets that like they've been through meditative states. You know, mm-hmm. everybody has music they like to relax to.
Right.
I'm also pretty sure most of you have heard of the horrible things the governments around the world have done with audio and torture.
Audio torture.
Right. So there are the easiest one is that we even see it, you know, just out on the street is these LRAD units that are, you know, just high powered, frequency is super high, super loud, and they just mm-hmm. pierce through your ears, and it's really, really uncomfortable, causing you pain. And then there's, again, like the more conspiratorial side where they, at the time of MK Ultra, they believe that they were using binaural beats to help influence the people that were on the LSD to help, you know, sedate them or put them into excited states
of
mania while they were on it. So to try to be able to control the people while they were under it.
Didn't the government, like the U.S. government, use like country music as a form of torture at one point?
Oh, yeah. Well, my favorite is I've heard, like, I don't want to get into it too much, but like at Guantanamo, they used like the Barney theme, so the I Love You, and played it on loop at like a very inhumane decibel level.
Yeah.
But my favorite use of this kind of a thing is when they, I think it was some liberation of an Afghanistan mission, I don't know, but they were playing Britney Spears through the streets and trying to like scare out the insurgents or something like that.
It happened
to work. I was like, okay, I can be down with that. I'm a Britney fan. Yeah. All right. So I want to kind of wrap this up with a little bit of some tying it to some people who you guys have probably heard of. So there's this band that I listen to called Oh, no. Why didn't I write it down? I wrote down the name of the album. I didn't write the name of the band down.
Oh, no.
Hold on. I'm going to have to look this up. I'm so sorry.
You're good.
So there's this band that I listened to, or at least that I listened to back in high school a lot, called The Receiving End of Sirens.
Okay.
Definitely an emo rock band from back in the day. But their gimmick was that they played a lot of concept albums, and the concept's really, really, really deep and interesting. And one of them, one of the albums is called The Earth Sings Me Fa Me.
Okay.
And I'd never heard of this before. And apparently, back in the 16th century, Johannes Kepler, which those of you who are space fans know of the Kepler telescope, I believe that's named after him. I believe so. Johannes Kepler, he theorized this idea that the Earth and the other celestial bodies resonate at a frequency. Specifically, his idea was that Venus in particular was a major sixth. The Earth was a minor sixth. Again, it's one of those wishy-washy things where he was, you know, he's a really smart guy, but this was definitely taken out of context by the public.
Okay.
You know, the public at the time being very artsy and musical based, he's trying to put it in and using it as a metaphor to try to teach the public that there are vibrations, that these bodies are living. And so he is... Obviously, that's not a thing that is real. But I'll tell you what, he was real darn close to something that is absolutely real, which is the Schumann response, or the resonance, Schumann resonance.
Okay.
This is another one of those things. If you Google this, you will have hours of down the rabbit hole conspiracy theories, everything from like health benefits to when the lizard people are coming back, like you name it, it has something to do with it, but it's a real thing. Suffice to say, it's a real thing. The Earth has a resonance and it's about 7.83 Hertz that it hums out there in space.
Yeah. And I've heard that, like, you can look that up on YouTube as well and listen to like the frequency of the Earth.
Yeah, exactly. There are some other interesting ties to how this kind of plays out, that they're, you know, like the Earth and the celestial bodies, and how, you know, if you're a Christian, God plays into this. I have particularly a friend who is a colleague of mine who's into Hebraic music, anthropology, how it, you know, the Old Testament plays into the Bible, essentially. And he's a musician and a sound engineer. And him and his wife have stumbled upon this kind of – I'm not going to go into it too much because it's their thing. But basically, they have somehow discovered some kind of linkage between Hebrew language the okay. words, the syllables that they use, how, because if you know anything about how the music plays into that, the chanting and everything, that the notes that are used somehow are holy, I want to say.
Right.
Like the word for something matches up to the same letter, the same numerals in a frequency, which is a note in that particular song that they were singing. It goes deep. But suffice it to say that this idea of resonance and frequency penetrates down to the religious level. Not only is it, you know, crazy scientists looking at the earth, you know, and what the aliens might be trying to teach us, but what God might have been trying to teach us all along.
Okay.
And there's all, you know, if you want to get into even Arabic mathematics, there's music, that area of the world, the math and the music kind of go hand in hand as well. Mm-hmm. And you start to see, as you, even, I would say even in, you know, Western music, you start to see these kind of things where, you know, the human brain's really good at seeing patterns.
Right, yeah.
So we pick up on these patterns. Like, how many times have you had somebody come up to you as a musician and go, oh man, you should be tuning to 444 hertz or like 432 hertz
okay.
Concert pitch because it's more in tune with the universe.
Right.
This is a thing that temperament or tuning specific frequencies have an effect.
Right.
On the religious experience.
Okay.
And those of you who have had religious experiences know it can be a powerful movement in the moment.
Well, I know, so my dad's a minister, and I know that, like, we've talked about in the past how some churches were using specific chords, or they were playing like frequencies under their music in order to get people to pass out and have these like religious experiences. You know, like you'll see a lot of those like televangelists.
Yeah,
you know,
the super evangelicals. Yeah,
where they're, you know, like getting people to like pass out from the Holy Spirit. And it turns out that they were just manipulating people with like low frequencies. And it was causing them to like pass out and stuff like that. And that was hilarious. What it was. Yeah. And like my dad was really upset when he found that out. He was like, you know, because he was like, they're manipulating people instead of actually giving them like, you know, a religious experience. Right. They're using all sorts of weird tactics to manipulate people to get them to follow them. And, you know, a lot of these people ended up being like cultists and stuff like that. So, right. I've actually heard of people doing that, you know, not to mention like just looking at Christian music in general, you'll notice that a lot of them use the same chord progressions and stuff. There are certain chord progressions that are just like I'll turn on the radio and immediately know that it's a Christian song before you even hear them say, you know, because God or Jesus, because you can hear those chords that are just religious chords, you know, and I don't know how to explain it other than that, but yeah.
It's something that I teach when I teach music. One of the first things you have to teach is like the difference between the major and the minor chord.
Yeah,
and the easiest thing to tell people, for those of you who don't know, major is happy sounding, minor is the sad sounding chord.
Yes.
And you ever ask yourself why?
I have no idea
why. Because
they just resonate that way, I suppose.
Exactly, and it's just the way that we perceive those sounds and perceive the world around us. And it can be perceived differently too, because like Indian music in particular has a bit of a, you know, a minor tonality to it.
Yeah.
Because of the mode that it's in and that they use microtonal frequencies as well.
Right.
That it sounds kind of, to an American ear, dark at times.
Right.
But if you talk to the people who are, you know, playing it, they're like, no, this is a wedding song.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a cultural like, okay, cool. thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I love how it all plays out. It's so interesting. Mm-hmm. And I will wrap this up talking about my favorite person and one of my favorite conspiracies in the entire world.
Okay.
Tesla.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, how I love Tesla. He is one of my like, if I'm not into having posters on my wall anymore. I'm not a teenager, but I might put a poster of Tesla on my wall eventually someday. That dude was, I mean, you guys have covered him. People think he was, you know, interdimensional alien being whatever. He could have just been a smart dude with a lot of time on his hands because the government didn't like gay people. I don't know if that was the thing or not. I've heard that was a problem back then. But so Tesla has created quite a few things that have ventured into the current public sci-fi world.
Right.
And one of those is the death machine with the test. You guys, I think, have talked about.
We've talked about the death ray. Yes. Yeah. Yes, we have.
So not a real thing. Yet again, it didn't come to fruition, but there was something that was built, that was actually built by Tesla, called Wardenclyffe Tower. And it was basically a smaller version of the, you know, you've seen the pictures of the death ray. It basically is a small version of that. It was funded by, of all people, JP Morgan.
Okay.
Like, oh, JP Morgan, yeah. So he was asked to build this tower, and it was a big science experiment to prove that AC power could be used to transmit wireless energy, which is at the time nobody had done wireless before.
Right.
So what was going on in the scientific field, there were two guys. There were Tesla and there was Marconi. And there was the foreshadowing for that. Marconi is the guy who invented the radio.
Right.
And so he is kind of, you know, side by side with Tesla. Tesla actually thought at the time that Marconi stole his information, his idea to make radio frequencies. I don't personally think that. I think two people can come upon the same idea at the same time. That's just how it works.
Right.
But suffice it to say that these two guys were in a race to reach wireless superiority in a world that had never seen a technology like this before. Okay. So Tesla, as we know, is a bit of a character.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
He's known for being a recluse and a little weird. Marconi is not this type of a person. He starts having a little bit of a breakdown, some mental issues, and just some other issues that are going wrong with his project at the tower. And JP Morgan decides to step back and says, I don't necessarily want to be a part of this.
Like associated
I think that Marconi has a better idea and we're going to go with him. And so they've got this giant tower, and it sat there empty until the guy literally years down the line bought the land and tore it down himself, some other person. So for a long time, there was just a big scary tower that a lot of people did not know what it did.
Right.
It's just electrical looking. So you can imagine how the conspiracies began to flourish. And that's where we got, I personally believe that's where we got the death ray thing, is that Wardenclyffe Tower was the popularization of the idea of him trying to make something like that. Part of these technologies that they came up with are still in use today in more conspiracy driving, like, plots, which are devices like the HARP machine. Which,
yes.
Have you guys talked about
the
HARP machine?
We have covered that, yes.
All right, okay. So here we go yet again. The HARP machine, for those who don't know, is supposedly a weather-controlling device up in, I think, Fairbanks, Alaska, under the guise of the U.S. military doing active auroral research, high-frequency active auroral research, you know, aurora borealis and things like that. So it's basically a giant antenna.
Yes.
And an antenna can be either way, receiver or transmitter, transceiver, if you will. So the idea being that they are using high frequency waves and pulsations of the AC, high frequency AC current that was created by the machines like a Tesla coil and then Wardenclyffe Tower and these giant capacitive Tesla machines are secretly somewhere there that power them. And that's what controls the weather for the Pacific Northwest. because they're seeding clouds.
Right.
So yet again, there is a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of truth to this.
Right.
The HARP machine, no, is not creating any sort of, you know, weather altering frequencies.
Oh, no.
But they have found that I'm going to get this wrong. I'm going to throw some science words at you. I don't even understand. Like high frequency ionization or something like that of water particles in the air. Basically, if you shove enough electricity into the air with a lot of water in it, you can do some weird things that create clouds.
Right.
And there's your basis for your weather phenomenon is that people were able to seed clouds with this. People, again, took that, ran with it a million miles up the highway, and now we have frogs turning people gay or something like that. I don't even know.
Oh, I forgot about that whole thing.
This is kind of just the end all of it, is that basically I wanted to talk about how we need to pay attention to the things that are unseen and unperceived, because we walk around in this life here in this modern world with literally everyday Wi-Fi and stuff hitting us constantly.
Right.
And that's information going through our bodies, you know, a million miles a second, and we don't perceive it. So how many other things out there are real physical things that are happening on a scientific level that are just not perceived because we have such a limited view as a human?
Right. Yeah.
So, that's really all I have. Sorry, that was a bit of a winding mess.
No, and it's not, I like
much
that.
Of a conspiracy, to be honest with you. But I did find it just really interesting that a lot of the things you guys have talked about kind of come up with this resonant frequency thing.
Like, right,
it's pervasive.
Yeah, that's really interesting. God, I like that. I'm gonna have to look more into that because, like, I love that sort of stuff. And like I said, I've done like scraping the surface kind of research on it, but yeah, I'm gonna have to look into that more. And then I am going to link like the YouTube video for the song by Marconi Union, just so that people can listen to that.
I would I'd throw up a you could probably find some random binaural beats YouTube video and throw probably. That up there and check it out.
I might do that as
see
well.
You guys get high off of it.
Okay, so we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then when we come back, I've got a sort of kind of cryptid for you guys. It's kind of a cryptid, but kind of not. Actually, it's you'll see when we get back. So when starting to do research for this cryptid or this whole topic, I was like, well, I've done for like this episode for the last 2 years, I've done Christmas sort of cryptid or a holiday sort of cryptid. You know, I've done Santa Claus, I've done Krampus, and I was like, I don't think I have any more holiday related cryptids or creatures to talk about. But then one of our,
I said, what about the Grinch?
No, I'm not going to talk about the Grinch. Grinch isn't. Grinch, first of all, is overrated. And second of all, it's like, that is just like a story from the last like century. So no.
Is he, as I say, would he be a cryptid or is he just like, he's just a weird who? Did they ever tell anybody what he actually was?
I mean, if you watch the Jim Carrey movie, he was just a creature that was delivered to the wrong town.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So
just a creature.
Yeah. Cause like,
I mean, that is pretty much Jim Carrey right there.
Yeah. Just, yeah. The but creature. Yeah, just in the gym. Cause I watched that movie for the first time just like 3 nights ago. I'd never seen it before. Yeah. I'd never seen it before. Cause I'm not a big Jim Carrey fan.
Oh my goodness.
I'm also not, I'm also not a Will Ferrell fan.
No, that I can't fault you.
I don't like
that.
Elf either. But anyway, so I watched the Jim Carrey Grinch movie for the first time just like this past week. And yeah, they give a backstory to the Grinch, which wasn't in the books. And basically, instead of having children like natural birth, they're delivered by like a stork sort of system.
Right. Oh, yeah,
and,
that's right.
You know, so there was a bunch of like
umbrellas.
Yeah, there were a bunch of like bassinets with umbrellas floating down into Whoville. And the Grinches knocked a Who baby out of the way and went down into Whoville instead. So the Grinch technically isn't a Who and technically shouldn't have ended up in Whoville, but apparently did. So
the only thing I remember from that, like vividly, of that entire movie is that scene, that exact scene.
Oh, okay.
It, only because following that scene, the camera pans down into the entrance of the house where they're having the party.
Mm-hmm.
And as they open the door, you realize that everybody's throwing their keys into a bowl.
I noticed that. I was like, oh my God, this is a key party? I was like, that is
I'll tell you what, as a kid, I watched that and didn't know what that was.
Yeah, and now as an adult, I do. And oh boy, that's a something. But anyway,
I digress.
Anyway, so yeah, so I was looking for like ideas of what to talk about. And then it just so happened that one of our members of The Crypt, which is our secret Facebook group for Patreon members, her name's Amber. She shared with us a meme about a Welsh holiday cryptid known as Mari Lwyd. Thank you, Amber, for sharing that with us. However, when I was doing research for Mari Lwyd, I realized that there wasn't enough to talk about even for 10 minutes, let alone for a half hour. So instead, I'm actually going to talk about like a few holiday cryptids from around the world. Then, you know, if I don't talk about the one from your culture, like if you're in a different part of the world and I don't mention yours, email me and let me know. That way I can talk about them next year because I need more
content farming.
So I am going to start out with talking about Mari Lwyd. So like I said, Mari Lwyd is a Welsh like legend or mythological creature. It's a zombie or skeletal horse head that wears a sort of veil or hood made of sackcloth, and it has lights or Christmas tree baubles for eyes, and its mane is made of streamers, holly, and ivy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is festive.
Very, right? So, yeah. According to Welsh legend, Mari Lwyd rises from the grave between Christmas Day and the Twelfth Night, and with their band of servants, travels door to door, getting into rhyming battles with the inhabitants of the houses in order to be allowed inside. So their goal is to get into your house.
So they try to rap battle you into your...
Basically.
Your house.
Yes. It's like a Christmas rap battle.
I'll take it. I'll take it. Okay.
So this tradition is carried on by attaching a horse skull and all the accoutrements I mentioned before to a pole, and then a person stands under the sackcloth shroud and carries it door to door. And should the family lose the rap battle, Mari Lwyd will be allowed inside and will be provided food and drink, and the house will have good fortune for the year. So you want to lose the rap battle and let the zombie horse into your house.
Oh.
Yeah, like you wouldn't think that. You would think that, you know, this trick-or-treating horse skeleton is the last thing that you'd want in your house for the holidays.
I'd be like, that was 2 months ago, bro. You're going to have to go to the next house. We ain't got any candy.
But wow. Apparently, you want the zombie horse to get into your house because it'll grant you good fortune.
Good fortune.
Mm-hmm. So the history of Mari Lwyd has been disputed by historians over the years, with different variations arising throughout the course of history, because it's been going on for so long that kind of people forgot where it came from.
As one does.
Yeah. So one Welsh translation of it is, or of Mari Lwyd, is Grey Mare, and it connects to the heritage of pale horses in Celtic and British mythology, many of whom can cross over from the underworld to and from the underworld. Another translation for Mari Lwyd is Grey Mary, which some scholars have linked to a legend connected to the nativity story. Basically, in this story, a pregnant horse was sent out from the stables when Mary arrived to have Jesus, and then the horse continued on going from door to door to find a place to give birth to her foal. I love that look on your face, but yes.
Interesting. For those of you who don't know, I was brought up in a very Christian household. Mm-hmm. My dad was also a pastor for a number of years. Mm-hmm. I have worked so many like church nativity story scene, drive-through nativity. You wouldn't believe. For every single Christmas of my life, pretty
right,
much.
Yes.
And this is the craziest version of Christmas I've heard so far. I mean, I like Krampus a lot. That was neat. That was dark.
Right.
But holy cow. Zombie horse
that might have been a pregnant horse that was booted from the stable to make room for baby Jesus. So horse Mary was pregnant with foal Jesus.
Right.
And person Jesus obviously took priority. So horse Mary had to go have foal Jesus somewhere else. and went door to door asking, is there room at this stable? Instead of, is there room at this inn?
I really hope that the people who, like, this isn't like a real, like, thing. Like, I really hope I'm not offending people by laughing at this, because the way that, like you said, the parallel to the Christ story is just hysterical. It was like somebody was like, well, what about horses? I like horses. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I like horses too.
Some,
and it's like,
girl,
what about
named,
Jesus' horse?
Some girl named Heather, who is a horse girl, got really upset and, you know, and wanted to know, what about Horse Mary?
Horse Jesus. was the horse, was the horse Jesus a Immaculate Conception?
We don't have any information.
Oh, we don't have, we don't know. Okay. So that doesn't matter. That didn't matter at all.
And then other folklorists have suggested that Mari Luid may be a pre-Christianity tradition linked to the pagan holiday of Samhain or other practices, and that it just lost its meaning over the centuries. But no one can really be sure. So the tradition in general is just kind of shrouded in mystery, adding to some of the creepiness. To me personally, it sounds like a pre-Christian tradition.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know many like Christian holidays that focus around like zombie horse skeletons.
I know one that's about zombie people, but that's a different thing.
Yeah.
That's just Easter.
So we're going to get into the next legend, which is Frau Holle. Frau Holle is described as a haggard old woman with large teeth and one oversized goose foot. She's known by many names depending on the country and the legend. In Italy, she's known as La Befana. In Russia, she's known as the Babushka. And in Austria, she's known as Berchta or Perchta. So this legend is all over the place. All the legends seem to predate Christianity and all point to her being a goddess or being that symbolized winter, witchcraft, and animals. Grim fairy tale version of the story, Frau Holle was responsible for bringing snow to our world when she would make her bed. She would beat the pillows and comforters until the feathers flew around the room, causing it to snow in our world. So... Yep.
Checks out. That's how it works.
However, in turning the tradition into a Christian one, it got really weird and convoluted, as most pagan religions did when they got translated into Christianity. With some regions making her a harbinger of punishment for laziness, and others having her bring candy and cookies to children. So it just really...
Which is it?
One thing that they all have in common, though, is that Frau Holle is associated with spinning. Now, not like spinning in circles, but spinning thread or yarn and spinning wheels.
Traditional spinning, yeah.
Yes. So she would travel around upholding the tradition that it was taboo to spin on the holidays. So basically, she would punish people if she caught them spinning on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
Interesting.
Yeah. In one of the Christian versions of the story, this is another one where Christianity turned it into a story that ties in with the nativity.
Oh.
So in one of the Christian versions, she is overly obsessed with order and cleanliness. So when the three kings pass by on their way to visit the Christ child, invite her to come along, she declines the offer as she hasn't finished her sweeping. But soon after they leave, Frau Holle comes to her senses and packs a bag or a basket of freshly baked cookies and goes out to find them, but they're too far ahead for her to catch up. So now each year on January 6th, like some sort of residual haunting, she packs up her cookies and sets off on a broomstick to find them. And she looks in every house with a child and leaves cookies behind.
These Christmas ones are like... Scary, 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 scary cookies! He's gonna come to your house. He's gonna open the window, slip inside, and give you nice fresh milk.
Right? There are other stories about Frau Holle, though, that are a lot more violent, and we're gonna get into those now.
Okay.
So some of these go as far as to punish lazy children by slitting open their stomachs, tearing out their intestines, and then sewing them back up, or stuffing them with straw and sewing them back up before moving on to the next house.
Wow.
Yeah. Some of these legends also point to her having a band of demons that may help her in doling out the punishments.
Oh.
Yeah. They're called like Stregel or something like that. And if you're wondering about the random oversized goose foot, which I mentioned, apparently it was believed back in the day that witches rubbed their bodies with goose fat, which enabled them to fly. And people left that fat in a pot outside as an offering to witches on Christmas night, where they would take nightly flights called grease flights over the 12 days of Christmas. And then the Brothers Grimm personally attributed the goose foot to her being a shape-shifting witch.
Grease flights is just what we call the last scene in that one movie.
So I left a lot of details out about this one just because it felt so random. And this story, to me, it really felt like a bunch of different cultural stories kind of all lumped together with nothing really being cohesive between the two. You know, like it really felt like these were all different like beings that were just kind of like not even variations. They really seem so completely drastically different, but somehow for some reason they all got lumped into the same person.
That's so bizarre.
Yeah.
So and I'm still so weirded out about the horse thing.
Yeah.
Why does it have to be undead?
I don't know. And nobody really knows because it's lost to history.
So bizarre.
So the next one that I'm going to get into is called the Belsnickel. Belsnickel is described as a filthy old man dressed in rags and furs, and he carries a switch for naughty children and candy and cookies for good children, and he sometimes wears a mask with a long tongue. So, right? And Belsnickel's from Germanic folklore, which I swear the majority of Germanic folklore is just based around terrifying and punishing children.
Exactly. I was going to say, nighttime stories would be like, sit down, shut up, and be scared.
Yeah, be scared. Because if you misbehave at all, you are going to be ripped to shreds. So, I mean, the Germans already have Krampus for punishing naughty children at Christmas. But apparently that wasn't enough because they also have Belsnickel. So Belsnickel.
A lot of naughty children.
Right? So Belsnickel doesn't travel with Santa Claus like Krampus does. He usually shows up prior to Christmas, and his main goal is to dish out punishment to naughty children by either beating them senseless with a switch or, in some cases, kidnapping and drowning them.
Okay, you had me at beating them with a switch, and you lost me at drowning. That's terrifying.
Right? However, he does carry around candies, cakes, and nuts in his pockets to give to good children should he happen across them. So Belsnickel originates in southwestern Germany, but he did make his way over here to the U.S. by way of the Pennsylvania Dutch, who to this day still recognize him as part of their holiday traditions.
That's interesting.
Yeah. In the Pennsylvania Dutch tradition, Belsnickel showed up 1 to 2 weeks before Christmas and often created a fright because he always knew exactly which of the children misbehaved. He would knock on the door or window with his stick, and often the children would have to answer a question for him or sing him a type of song. In exchange, he would toss candies onto the floor, and if the children jumped too quickly to get the candies, may end up getting struck with Belsnickel's switch.
Right.
So he gives them, like, he knocks on the window, the kids open the window and answer his riddle, and he gives them candy by not handing it to them, but chucking it on the floor. And if they dive for that candy too quickly, he beats them senseless with his switch. So
what lesson am I supposed to learn from this?
I don't know. A couple of little fun facts about Belsnickel, though. Back in the 19th century, it was popular for rowdy young men to go, quote unquote, Belsnickeling.
And that doesn't sound good.
They would basically get drunk and vandalize the city and play pranks.
Okay.
Which I feel like people do that on Christmas anyway. They just don't know that they're being traditional.
Right. I was going to say that they gave it a silly name.
But it's like people do that today, but they just don't realize that they're following Germanic tradition. Also in season 9, episode 9 of The Office entitled Dwight Christmas, Dwight Schrute dresses up as Belsnickel and spends a significant portion of the episode deciding if his coworkers were impish or admirable at the Christmas party.
Oh, OK. okay. I know what episode you're talking about exactly. Yes. And now that fills in some actual reference. Okay. Yep. That's very, very funny that he would have.
So, and it does make sense for the character because Dwight Schrute came from a very Pennsylvania. Well, they're from Scranton, Pennsylvania, and his family was Pennsylvania Dutch. Right. So it makes sense, you know, and I didn't realize that. I thought that they just made that up for the show. But no, Belsnickel was very real wow. in mythology.
Commitment to writing on right? the part of the office. Like, holy cow.
I really kind of want to go watch that episode now.
So I was going to say.
It's season 9, episode 9. I think that's the last season. I'm pretty sure it is. But yeah, season 9, episode 9, Dwight Christmas. I'm probably going to go watch that.
That's fantastic.
The last legend I'm going to talk about is broken into three parts because they're all tied together. So we have Gryla, the Yule Lads, and the Yule Cat. So we're going to start with Gryla. Gryla was a giantess or a troll or an ogre, depending on the legend. In some cases, she has a horned tail, and in other cases, she has 40 tails. The Yule Lads are the sons of Gryla, and there are 13 of them, and they're kind of similar to the Seven Dwarves in that they've got names that match their personalities. Ah. And then the Yule Cat is Gryla's cat that is sometimes that is usually described as a massive cat. Like, I'm talking like two-story cat. Like, oh, it's
so
a
like
big,
Clifford, but a cat.
Yes, yes, like a Clifford cat.
Cat.
And then it usually depends what coloration it is. Sometimes it's a black cat, other times it's, you know, other colors, but it just kind of depends. So according to Icelandic legend, Gryla was either a giantess, troll, or ogre who had an insatiable hunger for human children. She had a husband named Lepaludi, but for all intents and purposes, he's known to be lazy and has hardly any bearing on the legend at all, other than the fact that he's Gryla's husband and because of him, she was able to have the 13 Yule Lads.
Interesting.
Gryla is said to travel door to door, begging people to give her their naughty children so she can eat them, though she can be thwarted by giving her regular food so that she can move on to the next house.
How about some beans? I got beans.
In modern traditions, she has the Santa Claus-style omniscience to be able to detect naughty children year-round, and during Christmas time, she'll travel to the local villages, kidnapping the naughty children to take them back to her cave and cook them into her favorite dish, children's stew.
Creative.
Right? Moving on to the Yule Lads. The Yule Lads are the 13 sons of Gryla and Lepaludi, who are known to be mischievous and play pranks on humankind. They arrive one by one over the final 13 nights of leading up to Christmas, which is Yule, and leave small gifts. What?
I will.
No, Yule. Not you sorry. Will.
Sorry.
They'll leave small.
Just being dumb, going.
So they'll leave small gifts in shoes that children place on their windowsills. But if the child has been disobedient, they'll leave a potato in the shoe instead.
I prefer the potato.
Right? Each of the Yule Lads has a name based on their personality, which is why I mentioned that they were similar to the Seven Dwarves. So you've got Sheep Coat Clog, which is a peg-legged sheep fancier. You have Gully Hawk, who hides out in ditches, which are also called gullies, and waits for an opportune moment to run into the cow shed and lick the foam off the milk in the milking buckets. Okay. Very specific.
That is highly specific.
You have Stubby because he's short.
That's oh, no way. It.
you have my favorite, Spoon Licker.
Oh, yeah.
Who is a thief and licker of spoons. Pot Scraper, who is a petty thief of leftovers. You've got Spoon Licker's twin, Bowl Licker. Who hides under your bed and waits for you to absentmindedly put down your bowl so he can steal it and lick it. Door Slammer, who slams doors all night. Skier or Skyer Gobbler, who eats Skyer yogurt. I don't know. Sausage Swiper, who steals sausage.
I don't think that means what you think it means.
You have Window Peeper.
I don't think you mean
who watches you from the windows. No, that one is exactly what it means. Doorway sniffer.
Oh, gosh.
Who uses his incredibly large nose to sniff through doors to find bread. Meat hook, who always brings a hook along with him so he can steal meat, which seems very similar to sausage stealer or sausage swiper. But, you know, I guess sausage swiper is more just like he's more specific.
Yeah, he's like, I only like peppered meats.
Only like, only like sausage, where Meat Hook likes all meats. Hook is non-discriminatory.
Prime rib, it doesn't matter, yeah.
Okay. And then you also have Candle Stealer, who follows children around so he can steal their candles and leave them in the dark.
I mean, I get that one. That one's pretty funny.
But yeah, so these are the 13 Yule Lads, with their 13 very, very on the nose names. And
like I was waiting for like, and then there's One Arm Steve.
Yeah. But yeah, Spoon Licker is my favorite. So
that's fantastic.
So, and then finally, we're going to talk about the Yule Cat, which is the pet of both Gryla and the Yule Cat or Yule Lads. The Yule Cat's prey consists of both children and adults. So, you know, she's not just a children eater like everything else on this list.
Right. No discrimination.
Unlike the other Christmas monsters, this cat does not care about your misdeeds during the year. The only insurance of being against being torn apart and eaten by this giant cat is to get an article of clothing on Christmas Eve. So the Yule Cat will eat you unless you get a new pair of socks for Christmas.
I see where this is, like, this is somebody's grandma.
This was created to justify grandma giving you socks for Christmas.
Yep.
Well, grandma has to give you socks for Christmas or the Yule Cat will eat you.
That or it was Big Sock.
One in the same. But yeah, so that the only way to keep the Yule Cat at bay is to, and it has to be Christmas Eve. You have to get your clothing present on Christmas Eve.
Right.
So
right. Can it be somebody else's clothing?
As long as it's new to you, yes.
Oh.
So as long as you're given a present. I have
this scene of like running down a dark alleyway. It's like running into a guy. What's wrong with you? Give me your shirt, man. There's a cat chasing me.
It has to be a gift, though. Like it can't like you can't mug someone for their shirt in order to escape the Yule Cat. It has to be a Christmas present.
I was ready to write the new Christmas thriller where people getting chased down a dark alley is by the Yule
Cat. By this 2 foot or this 2-story tall cat that wants to like eat you because you didn't get new underwear for Christmas. But
that is terrifying. So right? Then where does the Yule log fit into that?
I have no idea. I mean, a Yule log is usually just like a special, from what I've always understood, a Yule log is a special log that you burn on Christmas Eve that has like different like spices and stuff in it to make it smell better. Oh. I could be wrong though. But
no, I think you're right. I mean, that would make sense. I'm from part of the country where apparently Yule logs are not a thing.
Yeah,
I don't think I've ever.
Okay, so according to Wikipedia, the Yule log is a specially selected log burnt on a hearth as a Christmas tradition in regions of Europe. It doesn't really say anything about that. I could have sworn that it had like special scent built into it, but it's just a special log.
We're just thinking of the ones that they make in America full of chemical that are like, here, cinnamon.
This one smells like apples. but yeah, so those are my holiday cryptids for this year. Cool. I wanted to learn about other cultures, and there's still plenty out there that I didn't cover. And if I didn't cover your culture's holiday horror, please email us at conspiraciesandcryptids@gmail.com and let me know what your cultures is, because I'm fascinated.
I'm so fascinated that there's so many different cultures that celebrate a similar holiday around the same time.
Yeah.
Like, I understand the whole basis of the pagan winter solstice.
Yes.
And, you know, how it devolved into the Christian Christmas or whatever.
Yes.
But, like, there are so many different religions and groups that all decided that December of all times is the year that we're going to get together.
The last month of the year, and a lot of cultures just celebrate the close out of the year, with some sort of holiday. So it makes sense, but yeah, so that's what I've got. Ian, I know you're not currently working on any projects, but are there any projects you've worked on that you would like to plug?
You know what? I'm not really doing anything much of anything right now. I have been in quarantine mode for the last however many, time means nothing anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know how long it's been, but I've spent so much time just doing nothing during quarantine, you know, that's not of necessarily productivity outside of work, that not a whole lot has come out of it. But I'll tell you what, this coming year, and I know this, I'm not the only one that feels this way, but this coming year kind of feels like the year to create.
Yes.
The year of productivity, you know, we all spent a year indoors.
Right,
so.
The year to make up for lost time. Well, I mean, think about it this way. The Renaissance took place after
the plague. Exactly.
You know, so maybe this could be the next Renaissance.
Exactly. If there's a silver lining, maybe we'll get a new Britney album out of this. Who knows?
Oh, speaking of Britney, I've really been wanting to talk about the whole conspiracy of, you know, save Britney or whatever.
Her dad and everything. Yeah. And yeah. You should probably talk about that.
Yeah, maybe someday.
That'd be fun.
Maybe I'll leave it for Tess to talk about next season. But yeah. So, well, I do want to plug your band, even though you guys haven't been working on that for a while.
Yeah.
But Ian has a band called Blind Medusa. They've got 4 songs out on Spotify right now.
Yeah, I think we got 4
songs.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's 4. Check them out. I love them. I've seen them play live a couple of times, and I'm their biggest fan, so.
I'm glad somebody's still listening.
Oh, yeah. I'm constantly recommending you guys to everybody, so.
Mike and I took some time off after October of last year, just to kind of regroup and kind of get our own lives in order. I was looking at, you know, trying to go full time at my job, and he was buckling down to try to buy a new car and things like that. So we put it to the side,
and then COVID
happened. So we'll see what comes out of that. I know that Mike's definitely been working on a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
he's been putting stuff in the background. But yeah, if you're interested, I guess you can check that out. That's a good point.
So I will link to all of that social, or your guys' social media, in our show notes as well. But thank you guys for listening as usual. I really just appreciate, well, we all really appreciate you guys so much for continuing to listen to us for, you know, 2.5, almost 3 years now.
Wow.
We will be back, I think January 15th is when we usually come back, give ourselves like the holidays, like Christmas and New Year's off. But yeah, so we should be back sometime in January. We're still kind of trying to like iron out the details of how we're going to proceed with our next season, but we'll keep you guys posted. So thank you guys for listening. We appreciate you. And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at Cryptipod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.